This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. On January 8, 2002, then-President George W. Bush signed No Child Left Behind into law, ushering in a new era of standardized test-based school reform. In the years that have since passed, a review of the evidence tells us that No Child Left Behind did not meet its own goals, education outcomes did not increase overall, and it did not significantly reduce achievement gaps, even as measured by those standardized exams. So here we are trying to figure out how to help our troubled schools. Still, do we write off No Child Left Behind as a failure, or are there lessons to be learned? Maybe the whole approach of high-stakes testing and teacher accountability is flawed. This half hour, we're talking with Thomas Ahn. He's a professor of economics at the University of Kentucky. He's the author of an American Enterprise Institute report. Were those standardized tests for nothing, the lessons of No Child Left Behind? And also, we have Bruce Fuller. He's a professor of education and public policy at the University of California at Berkeley. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
So let me ask Thomas Ahn, a professor of economics, University of Kentucky. So you're saying that there are some lessons to be learned from No Child Left Behind. Can you tell us what those are?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, so sort of as background, our study just asks a very simple question, right? Did No Child Left Behind work? Did it have impact on test scores, right? And it turns out that this simple question is actually really a tough nut to crack. One of the problems of analyzing No Child Left Behind was that it was implemented all at once, and this gives us little chance to evaluate it on a grand scale because basically we don't have a control group. So usually what we're left to do is to look at results before and after No Child Left Behind to see if it had an effect, right? So, and it turns out it's really difficult to do this right because education systems have been impacted by a lot of different things over the last two decades. So it's tough to tell if we're, you know, seeing increases or decreases in scores because of No Child Left Behind or because of immigration, for example. So what we did was we tried to evaluate little chunks of No Child Left Behind to see if they worked because we think we have a decent shot at finding a control group this way. So what we find is some parts of No Child Left Behind were effective in raising test scores and other parts were ineffective. There's basically two sets of schools that benefited from No Child Left Behind. The first set of schools are those that were historically doing well, and then they get hit with failure for the first time. Now, in No Child Left Behind, the first time a school fails to make the grade, they just get a warning. There's no punishment involved. And it turns out that this warning's enough to wake up many of these schools, and students at these schools experience an increase in test scores in the next year. The other set of schools that benefit are those that have been failing the No Child Left Behind criterion for six consecutive years. So with NCLB, with No Child Left Behind, once the school gets to a point like this, the prescribed sanction is pretty drastic. There's usually leadership change at the top, with principals and most of the administration being replaced. Now, we find once this leadership change occurs, we see test score increases at these schools as well. However, there's a bunch of sanctions that are imposed on schools in between these two extremes, which turn out to be mostly ineffective. Now, these sanctions aren't punishments for punishment's sake. You know, they include stuff like offering tutoring services, changing the academic curriculum, you know, hiring education consultants, things that could arguably be effective. And while they sound good on paper, it turns out that the realities on the ground in specific localities were such that ultimately they just didn't do much.
So Bruce Fuller, professor of education at University of California at Berkeley, you've written a response to Thomas Ahn's report. So what do you think about what he's saying?
Well, just briefly, I do applaud the effort by the American Enterprise Institute. It's a conservative think tank in D.C., as many of your listeners know. But Professor Ahn and his colleague are really trying to figure out when does Washington play an effective role, and when is it just policy talk or over-centralized management from D.C. that really has no effect inside classrooms, inside the heads and hearts of kids. So I do applaud what they're trying to do here. Just a little bit more evidence. And in Texas, it's nice to have this conversation in Texas because H. Ross Perot and Austin really got the standards-based accountability movement rolling in 1984. And then, of course, the states like Texas showed pretty strong effects in terms of raising achievement. and in terms of narrowing achievement gaps. When George W. Bush then went to D.C., he wanted to up the ante and further centralize the accountability movement in D.C. And I think that that's what Professor Ahn and his colleague are trying to do, is to say, okay, is there a value added? Is there some additional boost by having a highly centralized, highly regulated accountability system from D.C., or should we move back to a more federal system, as many in Texas are now arguing, where governors and state legislators are really in charge of the accountability system? There are risks in that, but that's kind of where we stand now in arguing about this with the Obama administration.
So, Tom Ahn, what do you think that we ought to pluck from No Child Left Behind and bring forward to today? We should focus on the positive outcomes, the things that did work. What were those things?
Yeah, so, you know, as I sort of summarize, you know, there are these sanctions that worked, and there are these sanctions that didn't work, you know, as Professor Fuller just sort of summarized for us. It's, you know, accountability systems, at least from research that I've done, they can work, but they have to be implemented correctly, right? And we see some of the prescriptions for reform set down by No Child Left Behind that were very effective and others that were completely ineffective. And we know from other researchers who've looked at other high-stakes testing systems and other state-level systems that some reforms work, you know, others don't do much, and others, you know, actually harm students. So I think there's many lessons to be learned, and I think that's really the point, is that going forward and imagining and implementing sort of the next set of education policies, we have to learn from our successes and failures from systems like No Child Left Behind.
So, but the sanctions that you say worked the best was going in and cleaning house and changing out the administration and the faculty. That's a tough sanction to sort of, you know, throw out there, you know, going immediately to that sanction.
Oh, and I definitely would not push that as sort of the first option. Remember, the schools that receive this leadership change sanction are schools that have been failing for six consecutive years.
If school's not working, then you got to hang out for six consecutive years to finally get to the sanction that you think is actually going to do some good.
No, so in the sense of, you know, do we want to implement, so going forward, do we want to implement the exact same system that we had in No Child Left Behind? I think, you know, most people would answer no, right? We've learned a couple of lessons from there. We want to tweak the system. We want to change the system and learn from the mistakes. I don't think going forward anyone would recommend, well, let's just wait around for 6 years and make sure that the school is just absolutely incorrigible before we step in.
Okay, we're going to go forward, take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about maybe the whole premise of No Child Left Behind was still flawed. Are there other ways to approach education reform in the United States? This is The Source on KSTX. We want your phone calls. The number is 614-8980. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the lessons of No Child Left Behind, the George W. Bush signature program of education reform. With me to talk about that, Tom Ahn. He's a professor of economics at the University of Kentucky. And Bruce Fuller, he's a professor of education and public policy at the University of California at Berkeley. So, Professor Fuller, let me ask you, why do we need education reform? What was wrong with education that we needed to have No Child Left Behind?
Well, I think there was clearly a problem in the 80s, as the state capitol in Austin recognized and most states around the country recognized, which was school spending had tripled between the early 60s and the early 90s, yet test scores were largely flat. So there was, I think, a predictable jump to kind of an efficiency, tough love perspective, as Professor Ahn has described. And when George W. Bush went to Washington, he enacted this sort of let's crack down on teachers, let's purge lousy teachers, and let's sanction schools that aren't showing strong upticks in achievement. The problem, I think, as Professor Ahn hinted at, is that a public policy that relies solely on punishment isn't very motivating for kids, parents, or teachers. And I think now what the Obama administration is struggling to do is to move away from this beating up on teachers approach, while still trying to toughen how teachers are evaluated, trying to encourage expansion of charter schools and more mixed markets of public and private schools. And, of course, this is controversial for a president and administration that's generally left of center, but to some extent borrows from market principles and borrows from the Bush administration. But I think what we're seeing in Washington is this awkward, clumsy shift, trying to move away from a tough love, let's crack down on teachers in schools, to more trying to enrich the school as a workplace, to motivate teachers, just like a progressive corporation would do. No private firm would just fire the lousy performers. In addition, they would try to motivate and make workplaces more inspiring places to be.
So, Professor Ahn, with No Child Left Behind, we're seeing all these waivers being granted by the Department of Education. So, effectively, No Child Left Behind is not in place any longer.
That's right, and I think for the better, in the sense that No Child Left Behind was imposed in a world where we didn't have data. One of the perhaps rightly so criticized points of No Child Left Behind is the way you evaluate schools is you look at proficiency rates in schools, right? What percentage of kids have attained grade level proficiency in reading and mathematics? And, you know, through a lot of research, what people have realized is you don't want to hold schools responsible for things that they can't control, right? Basically, how well or how poorly kids were educated in prior years. You want to hold schools accountable for how much growth did they instill in students during that academic year in which the school was responsible for them. So, you know, I think we're applying the lessons of No Child Left Behind, you know, even the failures, in realizing, okay, we have to evolve, we have to change the system.
But the criticism of a No Child Left Behind, and also, or maybe even more so, for President Obama's race to the top, is that they're continued down the same path of thinking of towards a sort of a privatization of public education, and these sanctions, or at least there is some incentivization for teachers with incentive pay for success, but still, trying to push. There's openings for charter schools, which their data shows they're not really any better than our public schools. So, should we just take a step back and take a look at our thinking, Professor Fuller?
Well, I think to some extent we're moving towards a model where the federal government will push states to track progress, to use data more effectively, as Professor Ahn is suggesting. That is, follow outcomes and set targets through the Common Core curriculum. This is proving controversial in places like Texas, but this is a volunteer effort by the states, by the National Governors Association, to have a more uniform set of curriculum standards.
So
if we can get everybody pulling in the same direction, state governments can track that, and then we try to free up schools locally to pursue those objectives. Now, that is a model borrowed from the private sector, but it doesn't necessarily mean privatization, although I do have to say the Obama administration has been very bullish on charter schools, even though, as you say, Steve, the evidence is quite uneven about the effectiveness. So I think we're kind of seeing a mixed model, similar to what we're seeing in healthcare, where government's trying to set more uniform targets for what kids should be learning and then trying to free up principals and school districts to innovate to get there. Now, that's a good theory on paper. Whether it works as well in an affluent leafy suburbs as it does in gritty inner city poverty areas is the question going forward.
Our phone lines are open. If you're a teacher and you had to work under No Child Left Behind, you want to hear what you thought of the experience. Our phone number is 614-8980, 614-8980. You know, but still, our education system that's coming from the Department of Education is focusing on basic skills. I mean, that's what my understanding is. And I mean, after you have your basic skills, it's really not that interesting to sit in the classroom day after day while you're waiting for the rest of the guys and your fellow pupils to get their basic skills. I mean, what can we learn from other education systems around the world, Thomas Ahn?
Well, I guess in the context of, where we are in the United States, I think, we should frankly acknowledge that we're not leading the pack anymore, right? We're sort of in the middle to below the average of OECD countries in terms of math achievement. So it's not, you know, we can't just sort of sit back and say, well, you know, we're doing what we have to do to educate these kids, because the fact is the world's becoming only more and more competitive, and, you know, we owe it to our kids to make sure that they're prepared to excel. Now, I think to a certain extent, you know, we hold up countries like Finland or Korea as models of academic achievement. But, you know, I think that's a little bit of a red herring, just because the United States is working from a much different position than those countries are. You know, those countries have homogenous cultures. They have a much more centralized government that can push education reforms much easier. So, you know, in the United States, you know, people get discouraged that education policy hasn't been as effective as one might hope. But I'm actually more surprised that, in spite of all of the problems that we may have, that we do see some improvements.
So as we have our trends towards charter schools and even homeschooling, are we seeing any data from how that is impacting these kids? Thomas on.
Oh. So the jury's still out on both, and homeschooling, I don't believe there's really any amount of data at this point to say whether that's helpful or not. I think charter schools, most folks will say that it really depends on the particular charter schools. I think on average, the effects wash out. I think there's good charter schools, and I think there's bad charter schools, and if you just sort of look to see, well, what's the average effect, you know, it turns out to be near zero. I think, again, sort of as with all things, we have to look at the charter schools that are doing well and learn what differentiates these charter schools from bad charter schools, you know, learn the elements that make these charter schools excel, and then try to see those ideas in all schools.
So, Bruce,
I would just add that.
Go ahead, Bruce.
I would just add quickly that these sort of skills for the 21st century, which is sort of the buzz phrase of the moment, involved social skills, problem-solving skills, working cooperatively in teams. You know, these are the kinds of inspiring social relations that drive software firms and high-tech industry. And I think one criticism No Child Left Behind, and indeed standards-based accountability from Austin or Sacramento or any other state capital, is that it emphasizes didactic teaching and testing kids in known knowledge. So we're drilling kids in math and English language arts. That's all the federal government requires. That's all most states require. And so we have this sort of 19th century view that we're just going to drill known knowledge into the heads of kids, even though industry is asking for a broader range of skills. And I think that's a dilemma for the Obama administration, because they want to look tough on teachers. They want to not look like they're easing up the pressure on local schools and teachers. But at the same time, this sort of religious reliance on testing, it really avoids the question of what are we teaching our kids to do, and what kinds of jobs are they going to be prepared to fill when they graduate.
So Thomas Ahn, the professor of economics at the University of Kentucky, one thing I've heard, I don't know if it's a myth or not, you can answer this, that when we have so much testing, that you have this the development of resources towards the students who are kind of just below that testing, passing the test. The students who are very smart and who don't need the help don't get any help, and the students who are not very swift, they just get ignored. But the focus is on those kids in the middle.
Right. So, yeah, so there's been a puzzle among economists looking into this area, right? So if you're thinking about this from a sort of a Machiavellian perspective of how do I make sure that my school just maximizes the chances of succeeding in No Child Left Behind while not caring about sort of the student population overall, you want to make sure most of your effort and attention is focused on students very near this cutoff line and make sure that they get across, right? You ignore the top performers because they're already proficient. You can ignore them and they'll remain proficient. You ignore the bottom performers because no matter how much effort you put in, they're not going to get over the bar. So this has been an issue of much debate among economists. So when we did the analysis for our data set, which was North Carolina, much to our surprise, we actually found that high achievers and low achievers are actually not hurt by No Child Left Behind. That is, they don't experience test score declines as a result of these No Child Left Behind sanctions. So we're a little bit puzzled by this, but I think as we look into the data further, what it's pointing to is No Child Left Behind also has in place at the same time a state-specific accountability system that looks at year-over-year test score growth, and they pay teachers a bonus based on this test score growth. So I think this system, in conjunction with No Child Left Behind, is what's keeping the scores for the high performers and the low performers up.
Okay, let me ask. We're running out of time, so I want to get Bruce Fuller one more question for him. So if we look at these countries with great education systems, Finland, Japan, Korea, Singapore, they all treat their teachers very well, and they have high mm-hmm. status in society. And we're not doing that here. We're not paying our teachers well enough or recognizing them for everything that they do. Why don't we adopt that reform?
Well, I think it is the problem with kind of blaming teachers, saying if we just off the bottom 10% of the teaching force, that's going to solve our problems. I mean, Finland, Norway, Korea, Hong Kong, these are places, yes, that place high status on the teaching occupation. They pay pretty ample starting salaries for teachers, and they treat teachers as professionals. They treat them more like physicians than like burger flippers. So this is a big cultural shift that's going to be required, and I think it starts with a federal and state administration that shows respect and really encourages the teachers to be treated like professionals in complicated and challenging workplaces.
All right, lessons learned from No Child Left Behind. I want to thank both of our guests, Thomas Ahn, professor of economics at the University of Kentucky, also Bruce Fuller, professor of education and public policy at the University of California at Berkeley. When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about prison reform, and I think these two issues are connected, so stay tuned. This is The Source on KSTX.